What side hustles can you start if you don't have any skills? What's up? Nick Loper here. Welcome to the Side Hustle Show, part of the Entrepreneur Podcast Network, helping you make extra money in your spare time since 2013. One of the more common questions that I get, and this came up in our recent survey this winter, is, hey, all these ideas are great, but I don't have any skills. And on the one hand, I totally get that. If you're a teacher, it might seem like an obvious path to start tutoring as a side hustle. Or if you're an accountant, you could start freelance accounting or start a bookkeeping business. But not everybody's skills align as smoothly as we might like into a natural fit side hustle. So what do you do in that case? What if you don't think you have any marketable skills? Is there still a path to earning extra income? Well, yes, there is. And that's the topic of today's show. Stick around in this one because I'm breaking down your four options to start a side hustle, even if you think you're skillless today. And I want to emphasize that think part because the curse of knowledge is very much a thing. Once you know something, it's hard to imagine not knowing it. Here's a question to consider to test if you might have fallen victim to this curse. If you had to give a presentation teaching something and you had to give it tomorrow, what would you talk about? For example, I've given talks on podcasting, on SEO, on email list building. None of these were skills that I learned in school or even would consider myself the world's leading expert on, but certainly expert enough to help other people. So if you had to give a presentation teaching something and you had to give it tomorrow, what would you talk about? So give yourself some credit. I have to imagine if you've managed to live on this planet for 2, 3, 4, 5, 7 decades, you've probably picked up something along the way. Now, another way to uncover these hidden skills is to think about what other people tend to ask you for help with. That's an area that you naturally have some perceived expertise in. Another way to test yourself here is just to ask a few friends. What would you say I know more about than the average person? And if that's a weird question to ask, you can blame me. Hey, this podcast I was listening to told me to ask. And you might be surprised with what kind of insight that you get. So that's the first step. Recognize you're probably not as skillless as you might think. Now, as promised, we've got four different side hustle frameworks to get you started, even if you're starting from that perceived position of zero marketable skills. Before we get into that, I do want to invite you to grab your own personalized playlist for the Side Hustle Show. Thousands of listeners have already claimed theirs by going to hustle.show. Once you're there, you'll answer a few short multiple choice questions. And then based on your answers, it's going to build you a custom curated playlist of the episodes that will be most relevant and impactful for you. So you can add them to your device, you can learn what works, and you can go make some more money. So that's at hustle.show. Make sure to claim yours over there. So what side hustles can you start if you don't have any skills? The first option is to plug into what I call plug and play side hustles. These are often under the umbrella of the gig economy. They're often app-based, and they're usually super flexible. And even more important, they usually don't require any special skills. Under this category, I would include options like driving for Uber or making Instacart deliveries. Simple, quick, easy to get started with, no specialized skills needed. If you can drive a car and you can find groceries, you're qualified, right? The downside with apps like these is the same as the upside. There's no specialized skills needed, so there's not a huge barrier to entry, which means your earning power is going to be limited by the time you have to put into it. And that's okay. You know that going in. There's no surprises there. You also don't have to do any of the marketing. The app company or the platform does all the marketing for you. So you're basically just filling existing demand. Also under this category of plug and play side hustles, I'd include some of the options that Jackie Mitchell mentioned in our recent episode on her $100 a day for 100 days challenge. A couple she mentioned were paid surveys, mobile game testing through Swagbucks, if you like playing mobile games. And her best paying spot for surveys was a platform called Prolific.
Prolific is going to always be at the top of my list. This is a survey site that researchers use. A lot of times they're post-grad students or medical researchers or psychological researchers, and they're paying pretty well per hour for short little surveys. So maybe it's a 10-minute survey, but it pays like $7. Well, that's really good if you break down.
In terms of an hourly rate.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So Prolific gives you mostly, I would say, 30-minute and under surveys. It's just prolific.com. Anyone can sign up. I do believe that they are often on a wait list because of demographics, just because researchers are looking for an even pool of a lot of different demographics. I would say consistently, when surveys are available, I can make anywhere from like $10 to $30 a day doing that.
Jackie also mentioned paid focus groups, which are kind of few and far between, but can pay between $50 and $200 an hour for those. I'll link up some of my favorite paid market research resources in the show notes for this episode. That'll be sidehustlenation.com/noskills. Another side hustle that Jackie talked about was data annotation, which I ended up testing out myself as well.
Data annotation is one that I would rate a 3 out of 5, just as my disclaimer, in terms of accessibility and kind of like, is the work enjoyable to do? I would say most likely no, but it pays well and it's an interesting site. So data annotation, and I'll group another site, RemoTasks, are both in the business of training large language models. So AI, think of things like Google Bard, think of things like OpenAI, ChatGPT. So a lot of it is kind of veiled to the workers in terms of like which ones you're training. And some of that is just because you're signing different disclosures. You're essentially freelancing for one of these major companies. But the majority of your work is going to be editing and classifying and fact-checking large language model responses. So maybe you're given 2 responses from 2 different versions of a language model. You're fact-checking it for accuracy, that it's not making up information. You're looking at if it was too verbose, did it run on and just give you way too much information that it didn't really need to give you? Was the grammar okay? Stuff like that. So there's a lot of different subsets within both RemoTasks and data annotation. You can get put on a lot of different tasks. There's more specific ones for people who code, which I know pay a ton, which is amazing if you code. I don't. Every time I see a qualification pop up for that, I wish I did. But typically these will pay anywhere from $15 to $25 an hour in my experience.
Okay. It's not bad. It's not nothing.
No, I don't think so. No.
What's the primary site that you're doing this through?
Data annotation is the name of the site. Yep.
Dataannotation.tech.
Yep.
Okay. The one that I signed up for was RemoTasks to try and check it out. And I was almost deterred. It was like, I got to do it for the blog post. I got to stick through this. But like the onboarding process took probably a couple hours worth of training things. Like you had to do an editing task, like that's easy enough. Like, okay, I would cross out this sentence, or this is the way I would phrase that instead to be more concise or whatever. But then you had to come up with a prompt response on your own. And there was one that was factual, like make an argument for XYZ. I forget what he's like, why should we cut NASA's budget or something? Okay, well, people are starving, so the money would be better allocated. Like you can make that argument. But the other one was like a fiction response or like a creative response.
Yeah.
And that one was like, dang.
I know.
I was really proud of what I came up with in the end. Like, but 500 words, it was like pretty decent sized, what I considered like the opening of a book. But it was like almost threw in the towel. It was like, this is pretty time consuming.
Yeah, I feel that way. Data annotation is super similar. And to my understanding, they really do screen out a lot of people through that test, which is not to say that you pass because you have XYZ. It is heavily geared towards people who enjoy long form writing, who enjoy fact checking and editing, who have very strong grammar skills. I think data annotation says something like grammar and writing skills and critical reasoning are the things that they look for. So you don't have to have degrees, anything like that, but it is grueling work. So I don't know how far you got into RemoTasks after that, but people who come to my page and say like, I took the data annotation test. That was awful. I can't wait to get in. I'm like, well, that's all that it is though. That's exactly what you're, if you take the test and you don't like it, that's all the prompts and all the work.
Once I got into RemoTasks, I earned $15 for my first hour of the actual annotation work, which it's not bad if that's something that you might like to do. So I'll link up my full RemoTasks review in the show notes for this episode as well. And I just got a kick out of this whole episode with Jackie. So make sure to go back and check that one out if you missed it. Episode 594 in your podcast player app on her $100 for 100 days challenge. So we've got the gig economy apps. We've got paid surveys and focus groups. We've got game testing. We've got data annotation. And the last plug and play side hustle I want to offer up is a service like ShareTown. No special skills required, but you will need a strong back and a big enough vehicle to transport big, bulky items like furniture and mattresses. This is the reverse logistics resale side hustle we've talked about a few times. ShareTown partners with these direct-to-consumer mattress and furniture brands to handle their return requests, but the brands don't really want the inventory back. So they work with local ShareTown reps, Side Hustle Show listeners in a lot of cases, to pick it up from the customer and then resell it and possibly recoup a little bit of the cost. And what's interesting is, while you will need a place to store this stuff until it sells, you don't actually have to pay for that inventory until you sell it. As a ShareTown rep, you profit on the spread between your sales price and what you ultimately owe for that item. Here's Chris Torres on how it works.
Right. And some people don't like it. Maybe it's the wrong color, buyer's remorse. And sometimes it's brand new in a box, which is great. People like that when we resell it on like Facebook Marketplace, Craigslist, OfferUp, things like that. So it works. It's really created lots of flexibility for us. And the money's great too. For example, you sell a mattress for $500 or $600 and the mattress retails for $2,000. People online see, they're like, what's the catch? Why is this mattress so cheap? So I tell them in a nutshell, this is a trial error. It's up to you. They do get sanitized. They do get cleaned. So a lot of people don't like the idea of mattresses being used. I totally understand that. But people don't care to lay on a mattress when they go away on a vacation that somebody's using every other day or every other in a hotel. So if it's a trial error, at least you realize the mattress gets inspected. You make sure it's not damaged. Make sure there's no stains on it. If anything's crazy, ShareTown shows you how to go through it. And they communicate with you and you communicate with them and it's not a big deal. You move on to the next item. They'll even pay you for picking it up. Say if you find something once in a blue moon, like very rarely. And since we've been doing it since July, there's only been 3 occasions where we had to discard the product.
Is there a typical weekly sales volume in terms of the pickups and the orders that you're receiving?
On a good week, you could easily make about 1,500 a week, 1,000 a week. Somewhere in that frame.
How many items is that?
3 to 4 or 5. Yeah, because that's not bad. So I try to sell something at least 1 or 2 a day. That's my goal.
It sounds like it's similar to these other gig economy, the DoorDashes of the world, through it's an app interface. It just didn't have the name recognition. It didn't have the huge venture backing that a lot of these gig apps had to go out and recruit this army of independent contractors on the ground level.
Yeah. Exactly what it is. Yep. What's cool about the app is it'll tell you the retail price. It'll tell you what ShareTown wants from you. And then it tells you the minimum what you should sell it for, what they recommend. The minimum. Yep. If there's a $2,000 mattress, ShareTown may only want like $350 for it or $250 or even sometimes less. Sometimes it's like $175. And you jump on Marketplace, people want a deal. So that's why people are like, wait a minute, you're selling a $2,000 mattress for $600 or $500. So ShareTown will get like what they're asking for. Like I said, $250 or $175, and I keep the rest. So sometimes I may make $300 or $400 a day. I may make $500 a day. So it all depends. And that's just on one item. Mattresses are great because I never realized how many people, I didn't know I was going to be in the mattress business. I didn't realize how many people need mattresses on a regular.
Become the mattress dealer in the local neighborhood.
We love it. We meet them at the storage unit. The storage unit's only 10 minutes up the road. It's great for people who live in metropolitan areas, urban areas, cities. I know there's people in certain rural areas where they may not get as much flow like this, but you could do it part-time. It's also great to do part-time if you live in those areas.
Be sure to check out our full ShareTown review page for more info on how it all works, or hit up our referral link, sidehustlenation.com/ShareTown to learn more. The full interview with Chris is up on our YouTube channel, and it's episode 580 in your podcast feed if you want to go check that out. I've got 3 more no-skill side hustle frameworks coming up right after this. If you travel a lot for work or for vacation, you might be familiar with that feeling you get knowing you're leaving your space unused for long periods of time, and you're still paying for that privilege. But hosting on Airbnb means you don't have to leave your home sitting empty when you're away. Being an Airbnb host isn't just a way to earn some extra cash. It's a chance to share your space and make a guest's vacation all the more memorable. You might be thinking, maybe my place isn't the right fit, but don't write it off just yet. Your potential Airbnb might be right in front of you. Whether it's a spare room or even your entire home, there's an opportunity waiting. Airbnb turns your home into a practical and even profitable venture. We just got back from a family trip to Hawaii where we stayed in a great Airbnb, but our place back home could have been a highlight to somebody else's travels, and we could have used the extra cash to help pay for the trip. So if you're curious about hosting on Airbnb, find out how much your space could be worth by visiting airbnb.com/host. Once again, that's airbnb.com/host. The next quote-unquote no-skill side hustle framework I want to introduce is what I'm going to call business-in-a-box side hustles. They're not as simple as the plug-and-play options we talked about a minute ago. You're going to have to put in a little more effort on the marketing front. It's not like signing up for Uber and getting ride requests pinging your phone, but let's work through some business-in-a-box examples. I think the recent vending machine episode is a good example of this. Find a location with 100 residential units or a workplace with 100 employees, get a modern machine, keep it well stocked, and you've got a semi-passive income stream that didn't require any advanced skills or degree on your part. The equipment rental side hustle might be another example. We had Lenny Tim on the show about his mobility scooter rental business in LA. And in his case, he did have some online skills to build the website and get it ranking. But there was a listener who took that model and just created a listing on the rental marketplace, cloudofgoods.com. Didn't have to create demand, didn't have to do much marketing at all, just went where the cash was already flowing and offered the product. Since then, with the idea validated, he went on to expand the fleet and build out his own platform.
Hey, Nick, Brian Rautenberg here in Minneapolis with Minnesota Mobility Rentals. I wanted to share an update with you on my mobility products rental business. Late last summer, I listened to your mobility scooter rental episode, and I thought I'd do some research on the market opportunity here. While doing this research, I came across a company called Cloud of Goods. They basically rely on individuals in markets to own and deliver products geared towards travelers. It's a rev share model where they do the Google, Facebook marketing, handle the rental transaction, payment, and then post the order in an app for partners to accept or decline. The largest portion of their product offering is in the mobility space. Think scooters, wheelchairs, power chairs, and some other various medical equipment. I decided to partner with them, bought a scooter, and then had my first order the very next day. The order frequency continued to be steady, and requests were coming in on a regular basis, sometimes 3 or 4 per day. With that said, I started thinking I could do this on my own, build my own brand and business, and keep 100% of the rental. I formed my own LLC, Minnesota Mobility Rentals, built my website, and started to run local and national Google ad campaigns. Almost immediately, I began to receive requests from local customers as well as folks traveling into the Twin Cities looking to rent mobility products. Now, about 4 full months in, have about 10 scooters, 10 wheelchairs, both electric and manual, and a few power chairs as well. I kind of thought things would slow down here and come the winter months. It gets a little bit chilly outside, but November was my best month to date with about $4,500 in rentals. August, September, and October average right around $3,500 a month. Hoping that someday maybe this transitions from my 5-to-9 becomes my 9-to-5. Thanks again, Nick, for the great content and inspiration that your show so graciously provides to your listeners. Appreciate all that you do. Take care.
Business in a box. Take a playbook that already exists and execute on it. Another side hustle you can start today is product flipping. Now, I do think the ability to source consistent, profitable inventory definitely is a skill you can develop over time, but this is a side hustle that's accessible to almost everyone. Buying low and selling high, that's the name of the game. And we've covered everything from online arbitrage to pallet flipping to consignment sales to furniture flipping and more. Here's Stacy Gallego's advice on how to find items to resell.
Never stick to one way of sourcing. I really try to have several ways that I source. I source at yard sales. I go to thrift stores. My big finds are usually on OfferUp, Facebook Marketplace, Letgo, just the local apps. And my goal really is to find those undervalued items locally and then resell them on a larger market. So I never really stick to one thing. I'm always looking for new ways to source. And my biggest new way, which is I learned from a private coaching group from Rob, and that was to build contacts. I tell people what I do. At first, you kind of keep it to yourself because you don't want to bug people with your new business idea or whatever. And so you don't always say what you do. But I started sharing that with people. And instead of them throwing out their items, they give them to me. I sell them and I can either give them part of the profit, or if they're going to dump them in the garbage, I'll take them and flip them and add to my inventory. And then when I have several contacts, just locally, one guy cleans out houses and then he sells me stuff very inexpensive. And then I have another guy that works at a thrift store locally, and he and I have a really good connection where he basically lets me shop at a store before he puts the stuff out.
Okay.
Yeah, it's really awesome.
Shoot, everybody else who's like going in there as the door opens, like, oh, the good stuff has already been picked up.
Right. Believe me, there's plenty of really good stuff. There's all kinds of ways to get items, and you can just make a really good living doing it.
Is there a reason that somebody listing on Facebook Marketplace or OfferUp or Letgo or Craigslist isn't valuing their item properly, or are you coming in with a lowball offer? Just kind of curious about the mechanics there.
Well, that can be a lot of reasons why people want to get rid of something. Maybe they don't know what it is. I try not to play that game. I don't want to take advantage of anybody in any way, but there's people that are moving, so they may be just needing to get rid of their stuff. Otherwise, they're going to have to pay to have it moved, and they really don't want the item anyway. There's items, like for instance, I just purchased a piece of equipment for a person that's disabled, and the guy sold it to me very inexpensive because he had family members that were using it that were no longer using it, and he just needed to get it out of his garage. So those are opportunities that basically we can help them by, instead of them dumping it somewhere in a landfill, we can pick it up and they get money and they're happy with it. And I just figure as long as they're happy and we can come to an agreement, it's a good deal for both of us.
Right. Ends up being a win-win. I don't want to deal with it. And that's kind of been a lot of our stuff that I have sold or even maybe mistakenly given away or set out in the bulky item pickup for the garbage collectors. Like, I just don't want to deal with it. And I'm willing to deal with it, especially for the stuff that you think might be worth several hundred dollars or more. So equipment for disabled person, any other home run finds that you care to share?
Well, a couple of my favorites are, I found it's a Town and Country vintage skateboard. I found it at a yard sale. And I just looked up the name quickly on eBay, and I could see that some of them were selling for quite a bit. And this one was in mint condition. I mean, like it had never even been used. So I asked him, well, what do you want? He said $5. And I thought, I'll take a chance on $5. I don't skateboard or anything, so I didn't know anything about it, which is kind of the fun part of the business. A lot of the things that I get, I have no idea what they are or even what they're used for, but I can figure out how much they're worth and be able to sell them. So I grabbed it. I took photos of it because I was really concerned because it was so nice that maybe it's not genuine or real. So I took photos of it and I sent a message to the company where it was made in Hawaii. And the guy immediately, they didn't even make the skateboard anymore. They only were making surfboards. So he sent me a message back and offered to buy it for $300. And I thought, oh, okay, this is worth some money. So I listed it on eBay and sold it 5 days later for $650.
Wow. When we spoke, Stacy was making around $7,000 a month from her flipping business and scaling back from her nursing job as the income grew. Real quick, the Rob that she mentioned in that clip is Rob Stevenson from fleamarketflipper.com. He's got a free flipping training that you can check out on demand at sidehustlenation.com/FMF. That's FMF for Flea Market Flipper, sidehustlenation.com/FMF for that on-demand training. So business in a box. It can include side hustles like vending machines, equipment rentals, product flipping, where there's this existing playbook that you can use. You don't have to reinvent the wheel. You don't have to go out and sell your specific skills or expertise. And you can tap into some existing market demand. Another business in a box idea that's been covered on the show is the parking lot cleanup business. If you can walk, if you can sweep, if you can pick up litter, you've got all the skills required for this one. Here's Vladimir Hernandez on how he found his first customers.
You want to basically drive around to area parking lots that are in your area, see if you could get in contact with one of the tenants there and see if they could have you speak with them. They could give you the number to speak with the manager. So that's what I did. I actually went to one of the plazas that's next to where I live. Basically, I walked in and I was like, hey, my name is Vladimir. I'm a local vendor in the area. My company is specialized in cleaning up litter and debris from parking lots. Do you know who's the manager? They were like, well, the manager's not here. I could give you his phone number. You give him a call. I gave him a call and I was like, hey, my name is Vladimir from Litter Free Lots. I'm a local vendor in the area. My company specializes in picking up litter, debris. Are you interested in that type of service? He was like, let's schedule an appointment to come to my office so we could talk. So I did. I actually scheduled an appointment with the manager. I went, sat down with him. Okay. And he was like, listen, I have this lot. I have others. And I was like, wow. I was like, so from that one lot, he had like eight other locations that needed sweeping. So that's how I actually started.
Wow. So, and he didn't ask for portfolio or references or anything. He's just like, hey, I'll give you a shot on this one. And if you do okay, we'll talk about the rest. Is that how it kind of went down?
Yeah. When I went to his office, I was dressed professionally and I walked in. I had my business card. I had a little flyer. I handed it over to him and I said, you know, I gave him a little speech of what I did. And I guess he felt confident and he felt some type of connection with me, or the vibe he got from me. He felt like he was comfortable with me. Then from there, he was just, he felt, hey, you know, I'll give this guy a shot.
Did he have an existing service provider? And that's always, you know, with any of these businesses, like, are you coming in? Are you displacing some part of the process that already exists if the business has been around for any length of time? Like, or have they just been letting the trash pile up for years and years?
With this location that I know, it was basically the tenants were sweeping in front of their areas. So whatever is in front of them, they were sweeping. So there was like this 5 storefronts and they were just coming out and they were just doing their area. As soon as I got on and I started sweeping, you could hear the tenants, like, the wind was blowing over to my end. But now that you're here, it's so much better. I don't have to deal with this stuff. So at the beginning, I was trying to shoot for like 35 an hour. That was like my number. And monthly, it was coming out to, I'll say, 450, 500 bucks a month. At that time, I felt like, is this worth it at that price? But like, it was my first account. I felt like, you know what? Let's get in the door first. I felt like, let's go ahead and let's just go in and at that price.
Yeah. Did that end up being too high, too low, just about right? Like if the guy signs, he's like, oh, shoot, you know, sign me up. Like, oh, I priced too low.
The reaction was like, I submitted the proposal for 5 days and I received an email and it was signed. And I was like, wow, okay. So it went through. It wasn't no, I didn't get, oh, the price is too expensive. I didn't get no reaction like that. It was more like I sent the proposal through email. When I turned around, he says, when can you start? And the proposal was signed. And I was like, okay. I was like, yeah, I could start Monday.
Hey, let's do it. Yeah, I just added 450 bucks a month to my bottom line here. That episode with Vladimir is number 522 in your podcast app. And it was actually inspired by Brian Winch on episode 266, way back in the archives. You can learn more about Brian and his parking lot cleaning business training at sidehustlenation.com/cleanlots. Vladimir is actually a student of Brian's. And so that wraps up our first two frameworks of what you can do to make extra money without selling any specific skills. We covered plug and play side hustles and business in a box side hustles. The next framework is one that a lot of people overlook, and I'll share it right after we take a quick break to thank our sponsors. This edition of the Side Hustle Show is sponsored by Squarespace. Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform that makes it easy to create a beautiful website, engage with your audience, and sell anything from products to content to time, all in one place and all on your own terms. Here's a couple new things, or at least new to me things, about Squarespace you should know about. First up is their new AI-guided design system called Squarespace Blueprint. I was playing around with this the other day. It's super slick. It might be the fastest way to get a professionally curated layout tailored to your brand or to your business and optimized for every device. Next up is Squarespace's flexible payment options that make it easy for customers to do business with you online. That means you can accept credit cards, PayPal, Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, you can even offer customers the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. And finally, Squarespace's built-in SEO tools help you show up more often to more people and grow the way you want. So head on over to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/sidehustle to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Are you looking for your next business venture? It's so easy to get started in vending, and the possibilities of what you can sell are pretty much endless. Snacks and drinks, electronics, personal care items, you name it, you can probably vend it. And what's great about getting started in the vending game is this: no degree required, just your own hustle. And our sponsor, Cantaloupe, can help you easily start a vending business and earn some passive income. Cantaloupe connects you with the right suppliers and partners to get started. They equip you with the technology to collect credit card and mobile payments right out of the gate. And they provide free software that helps you manage your business from day one. So join the more than 30,000 entrepreneurs who rely on Cantaloupe to run and grow their vending businesses every single day. To get started, visit cantaloupe.com/sidehustle. That's cantaloupe, like the fruit, cantaloupe.com/sidehustle. And big thanks to Cantaloupe for sponsoring the show. The next framework I want to present is one that a lot of people overlook, and that's to learn a new skill. Even if you don't think you have any skills today, I guarantee you one thing: You have the ability to learn new skills. For example, Matt Rowell of Maine in episode 308, he was recalled to active duty for the Navy. He was deployed to Djibouti for about a year. So he's working this desk job, but being a hands-on type of person, he wanted to do something more physical while he was out there. So he sees an ad for a local knife sharpening service and thinks, you know what? I could probably do that. So he orders this knife sharpening kit on Amazon, watches some tutorial videos on YouTube, and then convinces some friends and fellow service members to let him practice on their knives.
I spent some time on YouTube to figure it out. And I started with my own knives. And then to learn my trade, I just did them for free for the guys that I had befriended over there. And you can imagine in that environment, like that, we generalize the type of person, many of them do carry knives. So there were plenty of knives to choose from. And then once you do a few for free, you know, like then they see their buddy and they're like, hey, I just got my knife sharpened. So I didn't monetize it much over there, a little bit, but it was more of a, for me, it was a way to find something to do with my hands, to learn a new craft. And then maybe we can get into some more of this later, but I was also doing some purposeful design and independent research into permaculture. And then I implemented that, the knife sharpening, into my permaculture project when I got home. So when, it was when I got home that I really turned it into, or tried to monetize it into, a side hustle.
Okay. And it was totally YouTube taught?
Yeah, exactly. It would be inappropriate for me to say that I didn't have a skill set going into it. Like, I've always worked with my hands. Like, I built my first car and I built my first boat. Like, so I absolutely had a skill set.
Sure.
But I had never sharpened knives. And to be totally upfront with you, like, I almost threw away my knife.
I say sure, like, that's like a normal thing to do. I wouldn't have the first idea of how to get started building a car or a boat. But I'm like, sure.
Yeah, but I think it's also maybe appropriate to share, like, I didn't know how to sharpen knives at all. Like, I almost threw away my kitchen set because they were dull. And then it kind of hit me like, hey, that's not the type of guy I am. So I started with a skill set, but I didn't know anything about sharpening when I got going.
So you can learn a new skill. You can build on what you already know. What's in your brain today doesn't have to be set in stone. When we first connected, Matt was earning a few hundred dollars a month with this side hustle, later scaled it to over $1,500 a month, still super part-time. That's episode 308. Recommend go check that one out. Another episode that comes to mind, really one of the most popular and surprising side hustles over the last 10 plus years of the Side Hustle Show, is the mobile notary loan signing side hustle. Surprising just because I'd never heard of it before. So we're probably overdue to revisit that at some point this year. But one place to start, one place to learn more about it, would be Brian Schooley in episode 286. Brian, the story goes, he's a father of five. He's working full-time in tire sales, looking for some extra money, starts working this weekend job, long hours, low pay, kind of take their toll. And so Brian hears about the loan signing gig on the Side Hustle Show, says, what have I got to lose? I'm going to give it a shot. So loan signing agents are the people who, you know, if you ever bought a home, you got to sign this giant stack of mortgage documents at closing. And so for each hour-long appointment, these signing agents, they're earning between $75 and $150 typically. So Brian bought into the loan signing system training course to learn all about the mortgage documents, the contracts, and how to market himself to actually get signings. But aside from that, no previous legal experience, no real estate experience. And afterwards, he was able to get signings right away, earning anywhere from $1,000 a month within a little while to over $8,000 a month during the refi boom a few years ago. Another example was Chris Misterick in web design. Taught himself the skills by going through free or very inexpensive online training, then started to land freelance work, ultimately averaging around $3,000 a month on the side, and then eventually transitioning into a new career at a much higher salary than before. Another career shift we saw was from Anita Smith in episode 497. She was laid off from her hospitality job during the pandemic, but took the opportunity to reskill and ended up doubling her salary in just a few months.
I went to this binge learning phase where I went to Coursera, Udemy, all those sites to try to like skill up and see what I can do. Stumbled upon Trailhead, which is the learning platform for Salesforce. Checked it out for a day. I was like, I don't have a background in IT. I can't do this. Okay. I'm never going to be able to change to that career. Fast forward past the learning binge watching phase, the actual Netflix binge watching phase. I went to like a podcast binging phase, and I actually heard about someone working in Salesforce, and they started this program talent stacker to help people pivot into that career. I checked it out and I was like, okay, well, let me take their free stuff and see what goes from there. I got a lot of value from it. So ended up getting into the program, paying for the paid version, and started that in October, got my admin certification, which is like the minimum certification you need to start a career in Salesforce, and then landed a job a few months after that, making double what I was making as a manager for like a giant company. I was making double starting salary.
Starting for a brand new career. The big takeaway from Anita is that your skills don't have to be set in stone. That and what I call the piggyback principle. How the piggyback principle works is that you hitch your cart to the popularity of an existing trend or software tool, Salesforce in this case. But we've seen examples from other side hustlers piggybacking on WordPress or ActiveCampaign or Asana or QuickBooks. Lots of opportunity out there. And the good news is new software products are coming out all the time. Side note, we did an episode specifically on Salesforce consulting with Brad Rice back in 2021. That's who she's referring to in that clip. That was episode 441, where he described this nice location-independent lifestyle, making a couple hundred grand a year, working part-time as a freelance Salesforce consultant, which is where that career shift can lead a few years down the road. If that sounds interesting, he's got a free 5-day Salesforce challenge where you can learn more and see if it might be a fit for you. SideHustleNation.com/Salesforce is my referral link. It'll get you over there. So that's framework number 3. Don't have any skills? No problem. Go learn a new one. It's going to cost you way less than a college degree and probably have a faster ROI. Now that brings us to our 4th and final framework for what you can do to make extra money if you don't have any skills that you can directly monetize, and that's to play matchmaker. How the matchmaker side hustle works is finding people who have a problem and then connecting them with other people who can solve that problem and then just taking a cut in the middle. This is also known as the agency model or maybe a productized service model, and it's a little more advanced than the other frameworks that I've been talking about. And the reason it's more advanced is you kind of have to balance both sides. You don't have to be an expert in the thing you're selling, but you do have to sell it, and you have to be able to find qualified people to fulfill that work. One of my favorite examples was a listener success story. Anthony and Janilka Hartzog in the Dallas, Texas area, they built up a residential house cleaning business using this exact matchmaker model. It wasn't about them doing the work. It was about finding other people who wanted to do the cleaning work and then taking a percentage.
One of your interviews where it was a guy that was making $10,000 a month in cleaning, but the caveat was he wasn't cleaning houses himself. That was a big caveat. So I brought the idea to my esteemed wife and
I said no. At that time, at first I thought he meant that we were going to be cleaning and he explained no. But at that time we had never run a business before. So it was just kind of left field. It's like, well, how would we do this? How would we know where to start? He's like, I'm telling you, I listen to this podcast and he's been doing it. So it kind of was a no. And then he brought it back maybe 2-3 months after with more results, more information that he's gained. And that was the kickstart for us.
All right. So this is Chris Schwab from ThinkMade. So it's like, if he can do this while he's still in college, like we ought to be able to figure this out. After convincing Janilka, what was the next step to make this thing a reality?
Before she even came back around and quote unquote me convincing her, the idea had to be planted first. That was a big part of it. Plant the idea, plant the seed, and then we'll revisit it over the next couple of weeks. So I spoke to Chris and he explained some of the basics. I did a lot of Googling, a lot of researching, and it was like, listen, we could do this. We're not going to have to clean. Here's how we're going to do it. We're going to hire contractors. It's going to be similar to like Handy.com or Airbnb or even Uber.
DoorDash.
We're not going to deliver food. We're not going to have hotels. It's going to be us connecting cleaners with people who want their houses cleaned.
Yeah, it's an interesting one because taking advantage of the current state of the business where a lot of these existing operators in the cleaning space and in really a lot of local service businesses, they don't have a great online presence. They kind of rely just on the clients they've always had, or, you know, maybe a little bit of word of mouth. But like they're not doing a lot of proactive marketing stuff in the digital age. And so you're saying, okay, we can come in here and present a well thought out brand, which you've done at maidstomatch.com, and then go out and find cleaners for that. So was it a matter of trying to book the jobs first or try and find cleaners first?
Oh, that's our number one question.
The chicken, which come first, the chicken or the egg?
Well, we always say that we get the contractors first because we don't want to do the clean. So if you start booking the jobs and they come in, unless you're able to go out there and do the clean, you need to have the contractors. And I know sometimes people are saying, well, I don't have enough work for contractors, so why would I continue to bring them on? But as a contractor, they have other jobs. They're not just relying on you. So that's okay for them to just be waiting, maybe a week or two to get jobs from you. But we definitely say get the contractors unless you are comfortable going to clean the home yourself.
And they went on to explain that they're sourcing cleaners from Facebook groups, from Craigslist, from Yelp, from Indeed, from all sorts of places, and then finding customers through Thumbtack, Nextdoor, Yelp, and eventually through SEO. The cleaning contractors get 60% of the cleaning price, and Anthony and Janilka take 40% to fund marketing overhead and their profit. I want to highlight what Janilka said. We'd never run a business before, and it reminded me of this quote from Kung Fu Panda, I think 3, where Master Shifu says, if you only do what you can do, you'll never be more than you are now. Something that really, really stood out to me when I was watching that with the kids. I was like, that's a fantastic line. Hey, you've never run a business before you start, and then you learn as you go, and you can always learn new skills. So the rest of that interview is episode 438 in your podcast feed, but the same model can be applied across a ton of different niches. We just heard from Russ Perry from Design Pickle playing the matchmaker game online in the graphic design space. He even said, hey, Nick, the truth is I sucked at design. It wasn't about him selling his skills. It was about solving other people's problem. Popular one right now seems to be selling short form video editing as an agency. This is similar to the episode with Justin Tan that we did on how he started and grew Video Husky, monthly video editing service. Wasn't about him doing the editing. It was about solving other people's problems. I still remember an old line from Kai Davis on the show years ago. Are you selling your time or are you selling results? And in a lot of ways, starting from the position of not being qualified to do the work yourself could actually help you avoid the really common freelance trap. Clients come to expect you to be the one doing the thing, laying the bricks, which can be really hard to reset expectations if, when you want to scale yourself out of that role. So those are our 4 frameworks. If you've ever caught yourself saying, but I don't have any skills, those were plug and play side hustles, things like gig economy apps, surveys, data annotation, ShareTown. Next up was business in a box side hustles. These could be vending machines, product flipping, starting a reselling business, equipment rentals, parking lot cleanup services, lots of examples there. 3 was to learn a new skill. We talked about knife sharpening. We talked about learning how to do web design. We talked about mobile notary services, becoming a Salesforce consultant. These are all real life examples from real Side Hustle Show guests. You have the ability to go out and learn new skills. And then 4 was play matchmaker. Solve other people's problems by connecting them with qualified help, adding in your own branding, marketing, and management layer in between. Examples include residential cleaning, graphic design, video editing. I'm sure you can come up with even more ideas once you start probing for pain, right? Looking for those expensive, hopefully recurring problems that customers would pay to get rid of. I had a blast putting together this episode. And if any of the side hustles mentioned sound interesting to you, I want to encourage you to check out the full episodes with those guests. I'm going to link everything up in the show notes at sidehustlenation.com/noskills, or you can just follow the show notes link in the episode description. And after you do that, or maybe even before, I'm not your boss, make sure to take the quick quiz at hustle.show. It's just a few short multiple choice questions, but based on your answers, we'll be able to build you a personalized playlist of the Side Hustle Show episodes that will be most helpful for you on your side hustle journey. Then you can add those to your device, you can learn what works, and you can go get paid. So again, hustle.show for your personalized playlist, and then check the show notes for this episode for all of the specific episodes that the clips are from. So big thanks to all our past guests for making this episode possible. Thanks to our sponsors for helping make this content free for everyone. As always, you can hit up sidehustlenation.com/deals for all the latest offers from our sponsors in one place. That is it for me. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you're finding value in the show, the greatest compliment is to share it with a friend. So fire off a text message. Hey, you know, it's not that I think you don't have any skills, but I still think you'd enjoy this podcast. Until next time, let's go out there and make something happen. And I'll catch you in the next edition of The Side Hustle Show. Hustle on.